At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
What can we learn from professional marketing executive for over 50 years that has been in trenches and know more than any of us what it takes to really run public relations agency and also marketing and be successful at it? But in addition, also the published author that created so much impact around how can we travel, volunteer, and make a difference, even if it's just the small incremental one every single time, specifically as we travel. How can we also get a funding for expeditions that we're eager to accomplish and reach new goals and objectives? Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lundberg here, and I'm super excited to introduce you to today's guest that is joining me from Boulder, Colorado, one of my favorite cities, and is going to share some powerful journey and what happened specifically in the process, not only achieving these tremendous goals and objectives, but also some of the personal challenges that he turned into tremendous success and showing to everyone what is possible. Without further ado, let me introduce you to Jeff Blumenfeld. Jeff, how are you?
I'm much better than I was 4 months ago. Let me tell you that.
Glad to hear that.
It was 4 months since my life changed for the better. It was my rebirth day, November 29th, 2023, when I was blessed with receiving a kidney from an unknown donor. And it was truly a miracle, one of the greatest gifts any human can give to another, maybe besides my own mother, gave me life. So one of the second greatest gifts, besides your own mother, is to give somebody the gift of life, an organ. And I still get pretty emotional about it 4 months later. And that's the situation I find myself in now. I'm in great health. The first 2 to 3 months were the hardest, but now I am in I'm in good shape. And I take 13 pills a day, and it suppresses my immunity, but it's a small price to pay. So let me tell you how this started. The year was 2009, and it was as if I were walking down the street and suddenly got hit by a piano. And that's how I felt when I went to my doctor, and he said, "You have microscopic blood in your urine." I didn't even know it was there. By definition, it was microscopic. And he says, "I want you to have an MRI just to check it out." I did have an MRI, and it found a tumor in my left kidney. That's where the piano falling on your head comes in. And so I said to the doctor, "What's the cure?" And he says, "Because of where the tumor is located, centralized in my left kidney, it would have to be taken out." I said, "That's the cure? Just remove the kidney?" And he said, "Yes. Plenty of people today live on one kidney. In fact, there's the kidney donor athletes. We just got back from climbing Kilimanjaro. They lived. They all were donors, and they all lived on, currently are in great physical shape, climbing mountains, running races, and all doing it on one kidney." So that was a real inspiration for me. So back in 2009, I lost the kidney. But I went on to have 13 great years. I went to Antarctica. I wrote two books. It was terrific. Saw the birth of a grandchild. It was just great. But then with annual physicals and blood tests, I found that my glomerular filtration rate, my GFR, was starting to drop. A good GFR is 70 or 80. Mine started to go to 50, to 40, to 30. And then in the beginning of 2022, it dropped to 20. And that made me eligible for transplant. To which the surgeon said to me, "Jeff, you're in great shape to have a transplant." And then the surgeon said, "Bring me a kidney and we'll put it in." Obviously, it's not that easy, but he says, "Bring me a kidney." And I said, "You're the doctor, you're the hospital. Where am I going to find you a kidney?" And he says, "Well, ask your friends, ask your relatives." Never that easy. That launched a 2-year search to find a living kidney donor. Otherwise, the wait for a deceased donor is at least 3 to 5 years. And the prognosis for a deceased donor is not as good as the prognosis for a living donor. So that's really the gold standard, to get a living kidney from a living kidney donor. And there are saints out there that consider kidney donation. And they're true saints. But it requires astronaut level testing for both the recipient and the donor. Astronaut level testing, which means before anybody can be a donor, they must pass battery of tests so that the medical professionals know that they're in good shape, that they can withstand the procedure.
And I'm sorry to hear the journey and how Tim's turned out, but I'm also glad that it has a wonderful, happy ending. And it's just remarkable to see how in a very short period of time, 4 months, you turn your life around since you received a transplant. But do you mind, for everybody watching and listening, obviously one major factor is how you live your daily life and how physically fit, healthy, and how you preserve your longevity in the long run. Do you mind sharing for everyone watching and listening? Because I know so many of us are struggling with either health or just prioritizing our wellness. What would be some of your advice based on years of that served you so well, so you can not only partake in these amazing adventures, but also obviously be able to receive transplant at 72.
Yeah, receive a transplant at 72. And the dialysis centers are full of people who cannot get a transplant. So their life, they're among the living dead. They're in hemodialysis. It's 3 days a week. It's 4 hours each time. And you're in a chair. You can't get up. Can't go to the bathroom. You have to sit there, watch TV, read a book, sleep. I did it for 2 months, and it's life-saving, but it's not great. But then I was able to transition to a form of dialysis that I could do at home. Hemodialysis is where they clean the blood. The form of dialysis that I transitioned to is called peritoneal dialysis, where they use the lining of your peritoneum, your abdomen, to actually filter toxins out. But to do that, you have to be hooked up to a machine all night. The one advantage, if there is an advantage to any of this, well, the advantage is it keeps you alive. But the one advantage is you can sleep through it. So you can literally hook up at 9 o'clock at night, and you have to be on for 8 or 9 hours, depending on your prescription. And then you unhook and you're good to go about your day. Although you are tired, you have brain fog. It's called chronic kidney disease. And there are 37 million people in this country with chronic kidney disease. And many people don't know they have it because it's it kind of sneaks up on you. But chronic kidney disease, it's the disease that keeps on giving. You get gout, you get high blood pressure, you get brain fog, you get tinnitus in your ears. There's a whole list of things that they have to try to treat chemically with injections, iron shots. You have to avoid potassium, no potatoes, no tomatoes, because it all stresses what little work you have on your kidney. But to get back to your question, when I was younger, I wouldn't say I was particularly healthy because you feel that you're immortal when you're young. But I never smoked. I dabbled in drugs, but I got over that quickly. Never smoked cigarettes. And then as I grew up, I realized how precious life really is. And I saw people around me committing suicide by food, by the things that they eat. So
wow.
I was, believe me, I am no health nut. I do eat meat to a limited degree. I'm not a vegan, although I can eat vegetarian, that's fine. But I have certain tenets. No smoking at all. No drugs, no smoking. I was drinking wine after I got this kidney. I quit drinking. And you know what? I realize alcohol is not your friend. It never is your friend. It never will be your friend. And I can still drink if I wanted to. But why stress the kidney? It's such a gift to be given a new kidney like this that allows me to function better than I have been functioning in 3 years. So back to December of 22, was really the last time that I could function without dialysis, December 22. I spent all of 22. Well, I went on dialysis in January of 23. So all of 22, I began the search for a kidney. And I got listed at hospitals to get on the list. And I was qualified to be on the list. I was listed at 4 hospitals. It was I had to be tested at each one. Mm-hmm. Stress tests, electrocardiogram, x-rays, chest x-ray, blood test. It's a full day of tests. If there's anything wrong with you, they'll find it. And there was nothing wrong with me. My heart was good. So I was fortunate in that. Still needed a kidney though. But in January of 22, I was getting what's called uremic. Can barely get off the couch. Brain fog. It was awful. And they put me on hemodialysis, the blood machine, for 2 months. And I got a great appreciation for what people with chronic kidney disease or end-stage renal disease, what they go through, because it's awful. And the anxiety, depression, the sadness, it's such a cycle. And then back to depression, anxiety, and sadness. It's awful, which is why now that I've received this gift of life, I'm trying to do what I can to help others. There are 89,000 people in this country looking for a kidney. There are 106,000 looking for an organ, heart, lung, liver, 106. But of the 106, 89,000 are looking for a kidney. And there's a lot of
interesting that kidney is the one of the largest, and it's a reason behind it. And I wanted to go back for a second when you mentioned something very powerful. The people are committing suicide on a daily basis, suicide by food. And obviously kidneys are more very sensitive. They need to be protected. And how much correlation between what we eat and how we take care of ourselves really does affect that. Thank you for sharing also what you do to not only preserve and continue, but I'm curious of what you found through all the research and opportunity for others to be educated. What should healthy human being that is relatively healthy, obviously as we age, pay attention to protect, first of all, and prevent something like this to occur?
Well, I'm not a medical professional, but what I've learned is that salt is in everything. Everything. You put salt on your margarita glass, it's not doing your kidney any favors. You eat French fries that are salted, not doing any favors. And processed foods loaded with salt. I was just at the airport, Denver Airport, looking for something to eat. I had a terrible time. The sandwiches, which now cost $14, of course, the sandwiches are deli meats. The deli meats are full of salt. You look at the nutrition labeling on a sandwich, and the salt milligrams are like 1,200 milligrams, and you're only allowed 2,200 per day. So that's half of your daily allowance of salt is in one sandwich that you're scarfing down at the airport. They put salt in the food to make it taste good, but it's killing you. And processed foods as well. All the snacks, I try as much as I can to avoid it all. Do I eat cereal sometimes? Yeah, I eat cereal. And then also that sugar. The amount of sugar that's in sodas, you know, when you can drink flavored seltzer water versus a Coke. I don't drink sodas at all. So I've eliminated salt as much as possible, but it's hidden in everything. I've eliminated sugar, drink coffee without sugar. You don't need it. And eliminated sodas and processed foods as much as you can. And now, especially since I'm immunocompromised, I've got to be careful. I can't eat meat unless it's cooked. I was in a steak restaurant, and yes, I do eat meat, but I had to have the meat cooked so well, it came out like a hockey puck. So I don't know what I'm going to do in a steak restaurant from now on, because it has to be cooked to 165. When you order medium rare, the steak's not cooked to 165. It is for me because I'm immunocompromised. Hopefully I can build up that immunity. And I'm sitting on the plane, the only one with a mask on. You know, compared to what I went through, this is a small price. This is a small price to pay. One of my favorite quotes comes from the great philosopher Bob Marley.
Yes.
Bob Marley said, "You don't know what strong is until being strong is your only choice." What strong is.
Very powerful quote.
That's the only thing you could do. So people think I'm strong. I'm trying to save my life here. So 89,000 people looking for a kidney, and there are about 16,000 kidney transplants a year, which means there's a shortage there. So I had to go out and market myself. I became the Michael J. Fox of kidney disease. Although Michael J. Fox is doing a lot more work for Parkinson than I'll ever do for kidney disease. But I had to go out and market myself. I had billboards. I did a photo shoot. And I could show you these images. Billboards, photo shoot, business cards, a sign on the car. What else did I do? I had two celebrities tweet on my behalf. I appeared on television 3 times telling my story. I was in 3 newspaper articles about it. I was a pretty private person until I realized that if I didn't tell my story, there's a likelihood that no one will step forward. So I did tell my story. It did appear on TV, Channel 7 in Denver, basically saved my life. A woman saw it who was not a match, not a match. But she came forward and donated a kidney in my name. That moved me up the list. Actually, it gave me what's called an activated voucher. So because she put a kidney into the system, the National Kidney Registry went out and scoured the country for a perfect match. and found one on the West Coast. When they found it, the choreography is impeccable. Choreography. They pulled the kidney from the donor, unknown to me. I have no idea who it was, male or female, black or white, doesn't matter. They pulled the kidney in the morning, put it in essentially a picnic cooler. It's a box that says kidney organ. Flew it to Denver. No, picked up at the West Coast Hospital, put it in the box, flew it, brought it to the airport on the West Coast, flew it to Denver. A courier picked it up at Denver International Airport. And by 7 o'clock that night, it was being installed. And it was a 5-hour operation. And I remember waking up just being freezing, because these operating rooms, they're absolutely frigid inside. I'm not sure why, maybe to restrict the growth of bacteria, I don't know, but I was freezing. And then get this, so that was overnight, they wheeled me back in at midnight. The next morning at 11 o'clock, and I'm hurting bad, physical therapist comes in and I'm getting teary. She says, let's go. We're going for a walk. And she got me up. And I walked. She got me walking in the hallway. 11 o'clock the next morning. And it hurt. And it hurt. And then I was in the hospital for a week. Sent home. Within a couple of weeks, I was feeling better. Within 3 months, I was cross-country skiing.
Wow, that's fantastic.
If you look at my Facebook, there's a picture after 3 months. Now it's 4 months. I had gone to Florida. My dad's still alive, thankfully. I went down to, I flew on a plane for the first time in 15 months. I realized I didn't miss much. It's just nasty. You have to basically ask permission to go to the bathroom. If you're next to the window, you know, just wait online for, it's not fun, but it gets you there. So now, after all that I went through, after going through this for 2 years, well, it was like a train headed my direction for 3 or 4 years as I saw my GFR going down. But really, in the January of 22, I realized I had to get serious and start to get listed and start to ask and start to do the research about it. And that's all of 22. I was chasing hospitals. I was getting listed at 4 hospitals, 2 in Denver, Miami, New York. I was watching webinars. My transplant centers had webinars. I was educating myself about it, which is what you have to do. And then by January of 23, I was seriously ill. Couldn't put it off. Had to go to dialysis. So now here I am at 4 months. And some people, when they retire, they pick up a hobby.
Yes.
Okay. Living in Colorado, the outdoors has been my hobby. Skiing and cross-country skiing and biking and fly fishing. I don't need to take up wood carving. No. The outdoors is your hobby in Colorado. So I don't need to do that. And I don't need to be a crossing guard to stay busy. I thought, although crossing guards do a great service to protect our children. I thought that my mission could be taking 50 years of marketing experience and helping other people find a kidney. And that's begun. The National Kidney Foundation asked me to speak. I gave a talk. I told an audience of about 30 kidney patients about the importance of social media. Afterwards, one guy comes up, he's about 75, and he starts laughing. And he says, I wouldn't even know how to turn on a computer. He's bragging. And I said to him, well, find yourself a 12-year-old to help you with this. Maybe I made an impression, I'm not sure. But you've got to embrace everything. You don't know where that kidney is going to come from. You've got to be everywhere at once and reach everyone you possibly can reach. My daughter put a sign on her car. She was in Bozeman, Montana, working out of their library. Somebody walks up to her and says, I saw your sign. You know, I'll look up your father. And she turned into someone who pursued the possibility of donation. She never pursued it, but she was in touch. She saw the sign. You know, that's what you do. You get your name out there as much as you possibly can. So, and that's where I am today, giving talks to kidney patients, writing stories. There's a gentleman, Mark McIntosh. He's looking for a kidney. He started an organization called Drive for Five. He hopes to find 5,000 kidney donors. Actually, 5,001, because Mark needs a kidney himself. And he wrote a blog about my experience, which you can see on his LinkedIn, Drive for Five. Giving a kidney is the greatest gift next to motherhood I think anybody could get. And let me tell you this story. You ready for this?
Yes.
I heard this story. A guy agrees to donate a kidney. And he goes through the testing. He shows up at the hospital for the testing. And they say to him, we've done a test on you. And we're taking you right now to the emergency room because you have a widowmaker, an aneurysm that could burst at any time. The fact that he came forward and volunteered to be a kidney donor saved his life. It did not help a recipient, but it saved his life. So there's some pretty serious karma for that. The fact that he thought about coming forward. And I tell you, for donors, it's the most complete physical you've ever had. It's like Mayo Clinic level testing for you. So I've also testified before the Colorado General Assembly, the state legislature. They're considering an act called the CARE Act, C-A-R-E, CARE Act. And what they want to do is they want to give donors a tax credit, just a simple $10,000 tax credit to thank them and incentivize other donors to come forward, $10,000 tax credit. They also want to prohibit employers from firing somebody because they lost time because they donated a kidney. You know, employers can't fire you for taking off the vote. And under this act in Colorado, if it passes, employers won't be able to fire you if you have to miss time because of that. They also want to have, and this is easy, they want to have a license plate to signify donors. Now, the state of Colorado has a license plate for Stegosaurus, so the state fossil. So it shouldn't be that hard. to have a license plate for a donor. So that's kind of what we're looking at in trying to get this passed. And I've already testified twice. It's a big process getting a bill passed. But if I can help, I'll do it.
That's fantastic. And it's so great to see the ripple effect it's being created. Obviously, you had your agency, you were doing a lot of professional marketing for other executives and other companies, and now leverage those skills to first time put yourself on the front and show, as you said, that it's what's possible to make yourself uncomfortably comfortable and then do the right thing and now being the advocate. With that, obviously, you did some amazing work as well with your publishing the books. Which I feel like this is new chapter for everyone, specifically obviously for you, advocating for kidney donation and support. But for everybody obviously watching and listening, I'm curious, you are on the Legacy Leader Show, with everything done, with all the beautiful expeditions and a trail in the world and books that you have and wisdom that you pass, what is still left in your bucket list, and what would you like your legacy to be known for?
That's a great question. What's left in my bucket list? Well, and first,
yes.
It's get well. And I'm doing a lot of smaller trips. But before I can get on a plane, remember, I've got to bring 13 pills a day for every day I'm gone. I'm a little reluctant to travel to another country right now, but my bucket list would be, I've been to Antarctica, I've been to Nepal twice on volunteer missions, New Zealand.
Wonderful.
It'd be cool. Got more expeditions that I want to do. I'm a member of the Explorers Club. This was an organization formed in New York in 1905.
Mm-hmm.
All the explorers you've ever really heard of have been part of this group. Cook, Perry, Amundsen, Thor Heyerdahl, Sir Edmund Hillary, the Mercury astronauts, the Apollo astronauts, all have been part of the Explorers Club. I walk in awe of them. I'm sitting in a meeting and there's Buzz Aldrin, you know, two people away from me in a meeting. I mean, these were my heroes. They still are my heroes. So, and I've been honored to have been chosen as the chair of the chapter of the Rocky Mountain chapter of the Explorers Club. There are 34 Explorers Club chapters around the world. There are 4,000 members in the Rocky Mountain region from Canada to Mexico. We're one of the 34 chapters, and I'm the chairman of the chapter. I'm very honored to be in that position. And we do monthly meetings. And anyone can follow along at explorers-rm.org, explorers-rm.org. So a legacy. I read obituaries, which I think happens when you get into your 70s. First, you read obituaries to see if you beat somebody age-wise. I say, well, he died at 60. I beat him. Or that guy's died at 89. That's a good goal to reach, 89. So you read obituaries and you see what they did for a living. And it's how do you want your obituary to read? And I think I would be honored if mine read that he was an author, he was a writer, and based on his personal health challenge, he helped other people.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.